So apparently, Glyn, you and I are the White House and Mortimer of the podcasting world. White House and Mortimer with sheep, apparently.
I don't know how to take that.
No, I don't. I don't know whether it's an insult or what. And equally, I don't know who's who. Are you White House or are you Mortimer?
I don't know. It would probably help if I'd watched that.
Have you not seen it?
Program they do. I haven't even seen it.
Oh, well, this is completely pointless then, because you've got no idea what I'm talking about.
Hopefully some of the listeners might do.
Yeah. You know who they are, though?
I know who they are, yeah.
Yeah, you've just never seen it. Yeah. It is very funny. It's all about fishing, and I'm not a fisherman, but it is a very funny program, and I do like both those guys. So.
Well, that gives me an incentive to watch it anyway, if nothing else.
And then you can decide which one you are.
Yeah, yeah.
I think based on his accent alone, I'm Paul Whitehouse because he comes from my neck of the woods.
Yeah, and I guess I'm a northerner, although I'm northwest rather than northeast. Mortimer.
But we can thank Alice Cambray for that.
But Bob Mortimer, he's a lot older than me. Hang on a minute, what am I signing up to here?
I think they both are.
Yeah. How old's Bob Mortimer then?
Oh, about 103, I think.
62, you see.
Oh, well, he's nearer me.
Yeah.
He's still younger than me, but there you go.
Okay, welcome to another Hidden Wiltshire podcast. We're up to, I don't know how many we're up to now, I can't keep count.
20, so this is number 20.
20, this must, so many.
This must be an anniversary of some sort.
I know. We're getting close to serious numbers on this now.
Yeah, it'll be our silver anniversary soon.
Yeah, silver anniversary. My name is Glyn Coy and I run the Hidden Wiltshire Project, and with me this week I have, as usual, my podcasting partner.
Paul Timlett, who also carries his bags for him.
You didn't carry them at the weekend, though. I got my son to do that.
No, I didn't. He did a sterling job.
Which, actually, we can talk about that, I guess.
Can we? Should we? I don't know.
Well, we can give a teaser.
Yeah, all right, go on.
So, what we've been doing over the last 2 weeks, well, at the weekend, we were out. We spent the whole of Saturday over by Milk Hill and explored up on the top there, the Wansdyke, Adam's Grave, etc., all the stuff around there. Knapp Hill, Golden Ball Hill, and then we came down into the villages, Alton Barnes and Alton Priors. And throughout all of this day-long process, we had a local with us, David Carson, whose family have farmed the Milk Hill area since the 1880s. So if there's anything that he doesn't know about Alton Barnes and Alton Priors and Milk Hill, then it's not worth knowing. But we also had a video camera, because we were actually recording something. At some point in the future, we will have a podcast, because I'll pull the audio down to a podcast, and we will have a vidcast? Videocast?
I think they call them vlogs, don't they?
Vlogs.
Video blogs.
Yeah, we'll have a video blog, which will document everything. So that was a really interesting day. Thanks to David for giving us all of his time. I think we all quite enjoyed it, actually. I especially enjoyed being taken up to Adam's grave in a Land Rover. That's always an exciting experience, but yeah, that's good.
Well, you were in the back of it.
No, I know.
but we had our two trusty assistants. So your son Rowan and my son Adam were there, sort of shooting the film for us whilst we tried to avoid getting our faces on camera.
I think thankfully we've got plenty of landscape shots to intersperse, so maybe we can have less video of us talking and more video of us talking over landscape shots, if you see what I mean.
It's just becoming a bit of a thing now, isn't it? Shooting a bit of film. So there was a little video I put on the Facebook group the other day about a place near here where there used to be some cottages and. Place I I very much like and I go to quite frequently. So I posted a little sort of video of that and a little sort of story about how it might have looked years gone by. And it's called Down Barn Cottages on Maddington Down, which is just outside Shrewton. And my chum, Paul Clifton, who lives opposite me, who's a transport correspondent for the BBC, and who is also on the closed Facebook group, so he's not only a follower, but he's a contributor. He sort of reminded me that he'd shot a piece of film there with the BBC earlier on this year, and I'd forgotten all about it. And in fact, it was the day that he caught me with my head in a puddle looking for fairy shrimps. And I think I did talk about that on a podcast, and I knew there were fairy shrimps up there somewhere, and I hadn't seen them before. And there I was on my hands and knees staring to this puddle, and the BBC film crew came down the track and caught me at it. Anyway, that was the day that Paul recorded this little piece. And he said he forgot about it as well, because it was back in June, and then the BBC aired it on just the local news programme. South Today. South Today. So it's sort of 6:30, but it's in the southern part of the county, southern part of Wiltshire, whereas people sort of west and the north tend to point more towards Bristol. And I think you get points west, don't you?
Points west, yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of people wouldn't have seen it. So anyway, Paul had sent me the little film, and I put that on the Facebook group yesterday. It's about 2 minutes 20 seconds or something, but it is about it's quite interesting, because it's about the holloways that sort of lead up to that part of the plain. And we talk a lot about holloways, and people sort of, if anybody wondered what a holloway was, well, you can see Paul Clifton walking along a couple of these holloways, and then he sort of visits the place where I shot my crappy bit of footage. They shot it properly with a BBC cameraman at this place where in the 1800s there would have been two cottages and a barn. I thought it was three cottages, but again, the aforementioned Alice Cambray has done some research, and she reckons there were two cottages there and a barn. And they were there and sort of occupied in the sort of mid to late 19th century, early part of the 20th century. And now there's nothing left because the MOD took it over and for training, and the buildings have been demolished. But Paul's film is fantastic because it really shows it in its setting. And then he sort of looks up the valley to the 1917 film set with the pond with the tree, or the pond that is no longer there, and some of the other sort of locations where they shot the film. So it's well worth a little watch. Only 2 minutes 20 seconds. It's a very charming little piece of footage.
Okay, I think I've got a copy of it, so I'll stick it on the YouTube channel. Hidden Wiltshire YouTube channel. So if you search on YouTube, by the time this comes out, you should be able to find it there.
But it's on the Facebook group as well.
Yeah.
I posted it last night, so you can go to either. So if you're not on Facebook, go to the YouTube, and you'll see it there.
Great. Okay, what else have we done? Oh, we did the final Hidden Wiltshire Museum walk, which was at Fifield Down and took in the Devil's Den and the Sarsons up there. Even got as far as the Polisher Stone, so we had a good 6 mile stomp that day.
It was a cracking
well attended. Well attended.
Good bunch of people.
Sadly,
somebody had his car broken into at the car park, which we discovered at the end. Somebody put the back windscreen in, but nothing stolen, but it's still a bloody nuisance and a right mess.
That's a really disappointing end to that, actually. Seeing that happen. That was a car park up by Manton House, which is the sort of official car park for the Fifield Down Natural England area. So so that was done. I think we probably need to arrange some sort of autumn winter walks. Maybe not happen so often, but there's a couple I'd like to do. I think I'd really like to go out and over to the other side of the county, Hippenscombe, around there, where you've got that famous Revillius view, and the painting, which is called Downland, I think it's called.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. It's on my shelf up here.
Head. Yeah, so I think that's going to be, that painting is going to be in the exhibition at Wiltshire Museum. That's starting soon. So
25th September.
That 25th starts. Of September. Yeah. So 25th of September to I think the end of January.
Yeah,
is going to be this fantastic, realist exhibition. Well worth going to Wiltshire Museum to have a look at that. Get yourself a ticket and get over there. But what we'll try and do is maybe one or two Revilius type walks over the period that the exhibition's open, so we can put some of these paintings in the context of the landscapes that they're in.
Yeah, and I think there's certainly, you know, it's a beautiful part of the county. And I don't think any of us have really sort of been over there and done any walks there.
No.
So I've got a sort of rough walk plotted around Hip and Scone, but probably this afternoon I'm going to call one of the Facebook followers who knows the area extremely well, and she's offered to sort of help me put together a route. Mm. So I'm going to give her a call this afternoon.
Yeah, I think the closest I've been there, I did a walk at Collingbourne Wood, which is just to the south, by Luggishall.
Luggishall.
How do you say that?
Luggishall.
Luggishall.
Yeah.
I always have a speech impediment when I try and say that name. But there's,
I got some friends who live there and they can't say it either.
Yeah, it's really on the Hampshire-Wiltshire border, isn't it? It's right on the edge.
Yeah.
But yeah, nice part of the world, well worth exploring.
Yeah, and of course there was that sort of discussion in the Facebook group recently about blind houses, you know, the sort of the lock-ups. Somebody put a picture of the... Of a building up on the, I can't remember what it's called now, is it the Straight Mile or the Fair Mile, which cuts
Fair
across,
Mile, I think.
The Fair Mile, cuts across the Downs there, heading in the direction of sort of Wilton Windmill. And the person posted a picture of this building, and it does indeed look like a blind house, but it's actually a water pumping station.
Yeah,
but it's pretty old and, you know, could easily be taken for a blind house. But
yeah.
I did a walk up there a couple of years ago, I think, and it is just, it's beautiful countryside. You know, again, you know, lots of bottoms, downlands, sweeping views. You know, classic Wiltshire, really.
Yeah, fantastic. One last thing. There was a new post that went up on the website, the Hidden Wiltshire website at hiddenwiltshire.com, which was done by Steve Dewey, another river one. 9 Mile River, which I thought was curious because it's not 9 miles long.
No,
but it's just a fascinating tour down that river, which is, again, it's on the other side of the county, isn't it?
It's sort of north of it flows into Bulford, but it goes up the valley to north of Bulford. So I'm laughing because your cat.
It's very vocal. Yeah, if people hear a cat, I apologise. I haven't quite found a solution to this noisy cat.
I've got one, but not here.
But I'm sure we've got plenty of cat lovers. But the problem is, I had two cats, and they're a brother and sister, both 8 years old, and one of them died recently. Sadly, the boy died. This sister, who's been left behind, has just become the noisiest cat I've ever experienced in my life. I can't get it to shut up. So it's there outside the door at the moment.
She's outside. Bloody hell.
Yeah. I don't know.
I can hear it from here.
I know. I'm very noisy.
15 miles away. I can hear it from here.
Oh, dear.
Anyway, it makes a change from the traffic in the background here, because we're recording this on a slightly different day, which we'll probably explain towards the end of the podcast, it's not Rat Run Friday. It's peace and quietude Wednesday,
right?
So I don't know about you, but I've not heard any traffic go past.
No, I haven't. Well, I think I heard one bit of traffic, but anyway, nothing like the normal rumble in the background. Okay, so shall we move on to this week's core topic?
Yeah,
which is all about Earlstoke Wood and beyond. Right, so yeah, back onto this week's topic. Earlstoke Wood was the teaser. But it's not just about Earlstoke Wood, it's about much more than that. It starts, where we're going to start the conversation is at Earlstoke Wood, but it's all linked to a walk we did with the museum folks a few weeks ago, which started at Earlstoke and then kind of went up onto Salisbury Plain and sort of went, did a bit of a circuit up there, but we took into, we took in the actual field where big chunks of the movie 1917 were filmed as well. Although you wouldn't know that anymore because there's no sign of it at all. So you have to know what you're looking for. But yeah, we started Earlstoke's an interesting place, isn't it? I mean, a lot of people drive through it because you've got that road that runs from sort of Westbury to Market Lavington.
Yeah.
It's like a cut-through road, so, you know, a lot of us drive along there. But unless you've got a reason to stop at Earlstoke, I don't know, maybe you want to buy a Skoda or something.
Well, you say that. That's a superb garage. And I've been in there several times and tried to buy cars from them because
right.
I would just love to support them, but they've never quite had what we wanted. Because they also used to sell Subarus as well. Or they actually, no, they do sell Subarus still, and they're no longer a Skoda dealer because Skoda wanted a big fancy city centre showroom, and Earlstoke isn't. But the guys here are absolutely brilliant. You know, the great mechanics. So that's one reason to stop there, and the other reason, of course, is the pub.
which
is a very good reason.
Which I think was closed for a bit, but it's now.
Yeah, I think they're in the process of preparing to reopen. There's been a lot of work going on there.
Yeah.
And, of course, there is a third reason to stop there. Do you know what that is? The prison. Earlstoke Prison.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is.
Which I'm sure you've spent many a happy hour in there.
Yeah, there is a prison. Earlstoke Prison. It's actually just up the hill as you come out of the village. Actually, that's an interesting location because it was built around what used to be the site of a manor house, which was built by some very rich chap from the past. I'll talk about him in a minute, actually, in the context of Earlstoke Wood. But this manor house was built up there. Eventually, it got taken over by the government in some way. I'm not sure what the story about them buying it is. But yeah, it was government owned, and I think during World War II it was used as a training place for the Special Operations Executive, or the SOE.
Yeah, and somebody on the walk said that it was the Navy trained up there as well, and whether that was from that building or whether that was just trained in the woods.
Yeah, well, the MOD eventually transferred it to the prison service, so there's now a prison built up around it. But I believe that in the wood area, that is used for training by the Navy.
Yeah. To your point about the SOE, the Special Operations Executive, during the war, where we parked, right next to the church in the middle of Earlstoke, right by the road there, again, I think it was the same chap who was telling us about the Navy. He sort of disappeared into the graveyard, didn't he? And was sort of rooting around in there. And he came back and said, "Oh, I've found it." "Found what?" And there was he sort of beckoned me over, and there was a gravestone. I'm just looking at a photograph I took of it. And there's a gravestone. It says, "Loving memories, Mary Louise Huntley Walker," who was, I mean, she was obviously English, British, whatever, but she was in the French Resistance.
She lived
in Earlstoke because she was buried in the graveyard there. Died in 1980, so she obviously sort of survived the war. And I meant to Google her and look her up and completely forgot, so maybe that's something people would want to do afterwards. But of course, thinking about it, the name like Mary Louise, she was more than likely French. So rather than sort of flying in and out of Earlstoke to join her French resistance colleagues. She likely, I would guess, came to England after the war and married an Englishman, Mr. Huntley Walker, whoever he was. So, yeah, I mean, Mary Louise to me sounds very much like a French name.
Yeah, but I wouldn't be surprised if she was linked to that SOE thing, because a lot of them were trying to go out and support organisations like the French Resistance, and often some of these resistance folks around Europe were trained up by the British to go off and, you know, do some disruption and assassinations and the rest of it. I remember I attended a talk a few months ago by the historian, Wiltshire-based historian Guy Walters, and it was set on Zoom over sort of, not Zoom, it was some Zoom equivalent over 5 nights, and it was all about the SOE, and he broke it down into different stories, like some guys went to attack a dam in Norway, and other ones went to assassinate a top German official whose name escapes me, but I should know, in the Czech Republic. And it was really interesting, really interesting. So, yeah.
Seems bizarre, doesn't it, to think of little old Earlstoke being a, you know, sort of a pivotal, or maybe not too strong a word, but, you know, important to the sort of SOE operations in the war. I mean, why Earlstoke? How did they end up operating out of there?
Yeah. It's fascinating, isn't it?
I wonder if there's a sort of little, maybe there's a little airstrip up there that they used to fly them in and out of. That'd be nice to think that happened. Maybe it's the airstrip that Turnip Airways operator.
Yeah,
up at Edison.
It's funny though, because I did a search for sort of Earlstoke jail to do a bit of research on it, and it threw up this YouTube clip that someone had taken. They shoved a drone up in the air and sort of done a perimeter fly around the whole prison, so you could get, I mean, it's a big site, you know.
That's against the law, you can't do that.
I know. It wasn't me.
I was going to say, I'm looking at you, Glyn.
Anyone in authority is listening to this, but it wasn't me. But it was a fascinating clip, just to see the scale of the prison itself from the air. It was it's worth a look.
A friend of mine who, in fact, probably my oldest friend, I went to school with him from at the age of about 10, I think. He was a probation officer for many, many years. He's a very senior probation officer based in the southeast, but he used to come from sort of like Brighton way all the way over to Earlstoke to see clients, they call them, don't they? But so it was obviously, you know, as a prison, it's obviously very important.
I think I've heard some funny stories about that prison over the years. I remember a while back there was a police alert that came out because one of the inmates was doing some grounds work, and he was driving the prison tractor, and he decided to make good his escape. So he drove the tractor out the front gate and went down the high street in West Lavington in this tractor. This police alert came out.
Superb.
This escaped convict who'd legged it in a tractor.
He hadn't chipped it or something, had he? He was sort of... 1,000 horsepower tractor, heading towards Westbury. Fantastic.
Oh dear.
Did they catch him?
I think they did in the end. Yeah. Of course. Now I'm googling it to see if I can find the news report, because it was one of those things that really, really tickled me at the time.
Yeah. Anyway, go on. You led the walk. Tell us where we walked.
So we started at just behind the church in Earlstoke is the sort of village car park, which is just opposite the entrance to the wood. So then you kind of go across the road, making sure that it's safe because it's a very busy road, and you go into the wood. Now, the wood itself is interesting because... You may pick this up as you walk through. It's not just a kind of natural piece of ancient woodland. It was designed as a kind of landscaped area in the sort of late 1700s, early 1800s, because there was a local gentleman who was actually the MP for Devizes, I think it was, a guy called Joshua Smith. obviously very rich, landed gentry and the rest of it. And what he did is he redesigned the village. So this is sort of between 1718 and 1810. He sort of rebuilt the manor house and put it at the site of Earlslake Jail. He moved the village from where the wood is now to the high street as it is now, and created this sort of extended parkland in with the wood as kind of its a landscaped area. And he put a pond in at the top, and there were some cascades built with the water coming down. And if you go in there and look around, you can kind of pick up that it's landscaped rather than a natural wood. And on top of that, and the edge of it is a walled cricket ground, which many people don't know about, but it's there in the edge of the wood.
That's kind of just behind the pub, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just before you go on, anybody who wants to sort of follow this, you posted a blog about this this month, didn't you? 6th of September.
Yep.
On the website, and it's just called Earlslake Wood and the 1917 Field. And I think you've got a map as well, haven't you?
Yeah, there's a map of the route down the bottom and some photos
that
allow you to follow along. But yeah, so you follow the track right through the wood until you kind of hit a pond. I think it's called Wellhead Pond on your left. And then you end up exiting the wood out into this quite a open area of grassland, which can be tremendously colourful in the spring, actually. It's full of dandelions. You get this sort of yellow effect on the grasses. And, of course, coming up through this wood has become very popular in the spring for bluebells. It has a fantastic show of bluebells, and word's gone around, so a lot of local people go there to get their bluebell fix in the spring.
Yeah, in fact, you've got you posted a photograph of the bluebells in that blog. I don't know whether you took it this spring or a previous year.
It's previous year, yeah.
Yeah, but I have to say it's one of my favourite bluebell photographs. That's just a stonkingly good photo.
Yeah, yeah. I think that was probably taken about 3 years ago, actually.
Right.
When I did a sort of bluebell. You know, that time, I've always been trying to get good bluebell photos. Bluebells are really hard to photograph and get the colours to match what you see with your eye. So that was a year. I just spent a week visiting bluebell woods and trying to nail some photos. And once I got them, I thought, that's it. I'm bluebelled out for the rest of my life now. I don't want to do it anymore.
Mind you, I think we said that on the podcast, so we're going to get complaints now. People saying, you're about bluebells again.
I know. It's funny because when they come, it's quite exciting because you kind of feel spring is on the way and the good weather and the longer days. Mm. But by the end of the bluebell season, you're kind of sick of the sight of them. Anyway, let's move on from bluebells.
Yeah.
In case we get more complaints.
We will get complaints.
But yeah, as you exit out of the wood, you're on this grassy plain. And if you look around you from that point, you can kind of see that ahead of you and all around, there's like a horseshoe shape of woodland, which is outside of Earlslake Wood. It's kind of a separate wood called Hillwood. So to your left, you've got Hillwood, which is very steep going up the escarpment of Salisbury Plain. And sort of to your right there, you've got Coolston Hollow. So there's a little road that comes up from the road that goes through Earlslake that takes you up Coolston Hollow and up onto the plain. Quite a nice road, actually. It's just a little bit hair-raising because it's quite narrow. As you know, it's one of those roads where you don't really want to see someone coming the other way.
But that's near the top, isn't it, of the wood?
So,
you'd need to look at the map that you posted in your blog. But you sort of climb up through the wood, don't you, along the track? As you said, you've got Hillwood to your left, which is actually on the return route, which is very steep. But as we're going ahead, heading out to the plain, that was pretty steep as well. And then right at the very top, before you sort of make a turn, you reach actually it's another hollow. We were talking about hollows earlier on. I think on the map it's actually sort of it's just marked as hollow. Yes, I think you said you called it Coulson Hollow. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I can see that now. I've driven up there and I've cycled up there a few times, and it's doable in a car. It's very easy. It's almost tarmac. The only thing is it's quite narrow, but there are passing places.
Yeah.
So you're not sort of completely stuck if you encounter something. You just have to somebody has to pull into a passing space. But it is quite steep, so hill starts can be quite a challenge on there if you do have to stop.
Yeah, yeah. And I think as we were walking through the wood there, sort of parallel to that road, we saw another sort of sunken path in the wood itself that looked like a hollow. Maybe it was an old track that went up there. But the main road is tarmacked, it's drivable.
Yeah, yeah. And it's popular with dog walkers. People sort of drive up there and get to the point where the track becomes rough, and they sort of park their cars up there and then walk their dogs.
Yeah, and the route I chose, we were trying to kind of head up the hill diagonally, because in Hillwood itself there are some tracks that kind of go straight up the front face of the escarpment, and it's bloody steep.
Yeah,
and you don't really want to be doing that. You want to try and find a sort of more diagonal route. In fact, it's so steep on the map. I mean, the contours are so close together; it's almost like created a brown.
Yeah, it's just a thick brown, line, isn't it? you do, and I guess because of that, I think there are a lot of guys on their motorbikes use the woods there, and they go hurtling around. And there does seem to be a bit of a conflict between walkers and motorbikes up there, and from what I can see looking at this map, motorbikes they shouldn't be up there. There's no byways.
They shouldn't be in the wood. That's the problem.
Yeah, it's footpaths. It's not open access. So legally they shouldn't be there.
Yeah. Anyway, but when you get to the top of the wood, you kind of come out onto the plateau of Salisbury Plain. And if you look behind you then, you've got a fantastic vista of view across to the Pusey Downs.
Yeah.
So you can see the Alton Barnes White Horse. And you can see from the left, it sort of starts at Roundway and then goes all the way across to the far side of the Pusey Downs. Fantastic view. And you know you're in the right place when you look ahead and you see a kind of water... It's not a water tower, I think it's like a water storage thing by the road.
I don't remember that. Oh, yeah. Yes, the reservoir.
Yeah. It's quite a big square thing.
That's right. It's right by the track, isn't it? The Imber Range path or track, the perimeter track. It's on there.
Yeah. And then what you do is you'll hit the main byway. It's kind of it goes from being tarmac to gravel and potholes and stuff by Stoke Hill Farm.
Yeah.
Stoke Hill Farm, is that actually a working farm?
Yes, it is. Yeah, I'm pretty certain it is, because I drove down there once by mistake and had to sort of turn around and come back up. Yeah. And there was a couple of farm vehicles parked in there. So I'm almost certain it is a working farm. But that track I mentioned, the Imber Range path, it's actually called the Imber Range Perimeter Path. And as you say, it's a combination of sort of track and a bit of tarmac. It's a byway, so you can drive on it, and quite a lot of people do. If you're going to do it in a car, then take it very, very slowly, because there's some damn big holes in it.
Yeah, yeah. I drove up there a few months ago and it was very potholed, very hard to navigate around. But it is quite well, that area up there is quite well used by the military.
Yeah.
I think when I went over there in the summer, there was a lot of activity up there, a lot of military vehicles. They blocked off some of the fields with temporary blocks to keep people out of them. And yeah, over down by New Zealand Farm, it was very, very active.
Yeah, New Zealand Farm, which we don't go quite as far as that, do we, on the walk?
No.
But you can see it. I think you can see it in the distance. I mean, New Zealand Farm Camp is a very, very active military camp, and it's off limits, so you can't go in there. Although a couple of years ago, two or three years ago, they had a sort of festival there, like a sort of rave.
Oh, right.
Obviously, with the MOD's blessing, you know, just turn up and have a rave in an army camp.
You might get shot.
Yeah, unless you want to end up in Allstoke prison. It was a sort of organised thing. But I was chatting to somebody on the walk and saying, what an ideal place to have it, really, because you're miles away from any habitation. You're not going to disturb anybody other than the whoever lives at Stoke Hill Farm. They might hear it. But it's really tucked away.
Yeah, but what you're trying to do here is, if on this particular walk we stayed on the byway until there was an opening on the right into the field that opens up there, which is just to the south of the byway. Before you get there, though, there is a sort of right of way that takes you down through some woods, right to the edge of. The Imber Range. I've walked down there before, and you get some fantastic views. But it's not well used at all, that, because the track actually takes you through some woods, and it was very overgrown. I had to hack my way through. But yeah, that's an interesting diversion. But on this particular route, yeah, we were staying on the byway. Now, one of the things that is a landmark there from that byway when you look onto the field is the solitary tree, which... We kind of call it the lollipop tree. I'm not sure why or whether that's...
Because it looks like a lollipop?
Yeah, could be. That might be a giveaway. yeah, but this tree is very... I don't know, it's just unique. It stands out. It's interesting.
Although I think, unless you've seen a picture of it, you probably wouldn't give it much of a second glance. You might notice it, as you say, because it's on its own and it's a slightly unusual shape. But I think some of the people we took up there didn't know what it was and its significance, which we'll come on to in a second. We had to point it out. And said, you know, look, it's that tree over there. Look, across the field there, it's that tree. And, And they just hadn't twigged, you know. Pardon the pun.
But, hadn't twigged. That was funny. But yeah, the tree itself, it's been photographed by some of us quite a bit. I think you've had a go at it. Steve Dewey's had a good go at it. I've had a go at it.
Yeah.
And it's one of my sort of favourite trees to try and photograph. But it was... I hope the tree has a good agent, because it took a starring role in the movie 1917.
Yeah.
Particularly in the end scene. So at the end of the movie, the main character is walking up to this tree at the end of the journey that he's been on throughout the movie, which is quite emotional and poignant. And he just wanders up to the tree and he sits down and leans against it at the end and opens up his wallet to look at the letters and photos. And it's...
Well, he's about to write a letter, isn't he?
Yeah.
To his colleague who was killed. And he sat down to write a letter to, I guess, his parents.
Yeah, yeah. But it's a very moving scene. And yeah, that tree is they chose that tree especially because they thought it would create an atmosphere. I remember seeing a sort of behind-the-scenes documentary about it, and they were saying that when they were scouting for locations, they go driving along the byways on the plane, and they just looked across this tree. And it wasn't just the tree in the end, because they took over the whole field.
Yeah.
And a big chunk of the opening 15 minutes is actually filmed in that field. So they dug out loads of trenches and made it look like the trenches in France in World War One.
Yeah. And you just wouldn't know now, would you? There's just no sign of it that they've been there at all.
No sign. They came in, it would have been about 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Dug it all up, created this really elaborate film set. And when they left, they just filled it all in, and you wouldn't know.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned earlier on the ponds where they built the French farmhouse set, where the aircraft crashes, the German aircraft sort of crash lands there, and they did the same. That was all dug up, and now you wouldn't know they'd been there, other than the fact that the pond that has been there for forever has dried up and never come back. So they, I don't know what they did, but they've, you know, the pond is now no more, which is such a shame.
But
otherwise, I mean, you know, they have to sign all sorts of undertakings to sort of restore the environment. In fact, when they were filming it, the bit over my neck of the woods, there's a stand of trees. It's called High Trees, and it sits on a ridge looking down over that pond and where they built the French farmhouse. And they did some of the early scenes up there where they're sitting in a wood, singing hymns before they go off to battle, and that was filmed at High Trees. So in order to build the set up there, they had to do a lot of work on the tracks, which, you know, in the sort of anything other than summer, they're just a quagmire because it's chalk and it's clay and it's just, you know, it's just a mud fest. And I was talking to some of the guys who were doing the work up there, and you know, and they made a great job of it because obviously they're having to bring a whole load of vehicles up there, films vehicles, you know, film company vehicles up to the site, and they were having to ferry you know, personnel up there, actors, you know, cast, all that stuff. So it had to be a really good track, and they said that they'd approached the MOD and said, look, you know, we've got to build this track, we've got to make it really durable. You know, and we can leave it like that if you like, and then you've got a good serviceable track. And the MOD said, no, it's got to be reinstated exactly as it was.
Yeah.
I.e., you know, chalk and clay track. And that's what it is. And, you know, in fact, I cycled up it the other day, and it's already starting to become quite muddy because of sort of recent rain. And, you know, in a couple of months' time, it'll be a quagmire again.
Yes. Funny how these organisations work, isn't it?
But it's fair enough. I mean, it's, you know, it shows the MOD's conservation credentials, I think.
Yeah, but on going back to this field here, on the website where I've got this article written, have a look at it. You'll see a good picture of the tree, but also I've dropped into it two YouTube clips. One of the ending scene and one of the starting scene, which are filmed in that field. And it's interesting because I once went into this field, this would have been last year before the lockdown started, and I had my phone with me, and I watched the first 9 minutes of the movie on my phone in the field, in the exact spot where it was filmed. So I had my phone in front of me, and then I would look up from the phone and see the actual scene in real life behind it. As it is now, it was a very interesting experience. I'd recommend doing that just for a laugh. It just brings it alive a bit more.
Well, you printed off some still pictures, hadn't you? And so when we were up there with the people on the walk, you know, that was really helpful to sort of hold up the pictures and, you know, with your back to the tree and showing people. You know, look at the picture and then look at the scene, and that's when it kind of dawned on a few people who didn't know about it.
Yeah. And of course, knowing all this, when I watched the film, it spoiled it a bit for me because you're supposed to suspend your disbelief and think you're in France, and I just kept recognising Wiltshire.
One or two people were saying that. I mean, when we went to see it, we were sort of, oh, look, there's so-and-so, and oh, recognise that. You're trying to spot places that you know.
Yeah, and they also had a lot of the extras in the film were local lads.
Yeah.
So quite a lot of local young men were in the movie itself and in the woods and stuff. And yeah.
Well, I told you that story when we were on the walk. I probably told you before, but a friend of my son's was an extra in the film. In fact, he was in the hospital tent towards the end. He was one of the wounded, and you do see his I think you see his feet because he's got one boot on and one off. And after they'd finished some breaking the filming, he sort of wandered over to that tree with his one boot on, and he was busting to the loo, so he stood behind the tree and had a pee up against it because not knowing that it would become such a star in its own right, you know? and that that actor would sit down with his back against the tree.
Oh, dear.
Yes. It'll soak away. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
Thankfully, it was just a pee.
Yeah, thankfully. Let's stop yeah, this conversation. Moving swiftly on. So once you've had a look around the field, you then start to follow the route back. So the route that we took here, what I did is I took the group down a trackway which leads down to Chapel Hill Farm, I think it is, which is sort of at the bottom of a bottom, really.
Bottom of the bottom, yes.
Here we go again, bottoms. We'll be getting told off again.
Yeah, so we came down Great Cheverel Hill to Cheverel Hill Farm.
Yeah, and some of the views from there are absolutely stunning.
Again, you're kind of like, this time you're facing the right direction, aren't you? So the views are all in front of you, instead of having to sort of stop and check behind you all the time to look at the views.
Yeah.
As I said before, if an old photographer's saying that quite often the best view is the one behind you.
Yeah.
But there it all sort of opens up in front of you.
Yeah. And the farm itself is not a working farm, this one. It's a military buildings really now.
Yeah.
But the farm itself is in a bit of a dip. So as you're going down the dip, the views open up across, if you look towards, over across towards Hillbottom Farm that way, the views are fantastic. So it's worth having a look. And I'm just noticing there on the map, between Great Cheverel Hill and Hillbottom Farm, there's a triangle of open access land on the... It just seems totally random.
Yeah, I did do a walk around there a couple of years ago. I can't see that open access land, though, that you're referring to. I found it. Oh, yeah, that is weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's tiny. What's that all about?
That's very weird.
And, of course, as we talked before, with open access land, sometimes it is just sort of isolated on its own.
Yeah.
But I think you are permitted to reach it from the nearest publicly accessible bit of land. YouTube started on my phone for some reason. So the nearest public right away is the one we've just in the walk we walked down to get to Cheverel Hill Farm.
Yeah, and I guess it's with this being MOD land. In the danger area, there is a sort of permissive...
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. It's
right to roam.
Yes. So that's how you reach it, in which case that being open access, that little triangle, would seem to be redundant.
Yeah.
Because it's all open
access.
It looks
like someone's just put that on the map for a laugh, really.
Yeah. In fact, looking at the track we came down to Great Cheverel Farm, it is just a track. There isn't... there's a public right of way to the east of it,
yeah,
but that is a bridle way, so you could could ride my bike down there, but the track we walked down, in theory I shouldn't ride my bike down there because it's not a bridle way. You can only walk on it, not ride on it, if that makes sense.
But
you're absolutely right, that is all open access. I'm not sure where the MOD land finishes though. Because the walk that I did started from the Imber Range perimeter path. I parked sort of on the tarmac bit of the road, which is further towards Gore Cross and the gateway or to Imber Village. So there's a good, really good bit of tarmac road, and there's some laybys there, so I did a walk from up there and then descended into the valleys and then up over what's called Four Hill, and I actually ended up in Little Cheverel, and that's, I guess, for another day. But there's some beautiful walks around there, and you can string together a load of sort of footpaths and bridleways, and it's one of these places where I think I saw one other person walking there.
I mean, I'm intending to go back and explore more of that area over the next few months, because it's a place I've kind of driven through and by and looked at longingly, but never really got my boots on and gone walking around there.
And I think you said that you mentioned that you can see Milk Hill and the White Horse over that way. I also remember sort of on Four Hill, which I mentioned just now, which is just to the east of the farm, Cheverell Hill Farm, and it's not very far east of it. But I remember looking out there from there, looking north, and you could see Devizes, and you could see Leipzig Plantation and the White Horse at Roundway as well.
Yeah,
from there. So again, the view, you're pretty high up, and the views are fantastic.
Yeah. The route from Cheverell Hill Farm, you kind of follow the road that goes up steadily uphill and takes you back into Hillwood.
So it goes up to, on the map, Pear Tree Hill, doesn't it?
Yeah,
so
yeah, it does.
See Pear Tree Hill on your map.
Yeah. And then it's a case of just finding a way down from Hillwood back into Earlstoke Wood, and there are some diagonal paths marked on the map, which are passable with care, I would say. They're quite steep.
They were very steep, weren't they?
Yeah, yeah. And there's been, when we were there, there's obviously been quite a lot of forestry work been going on because there were tank tracks and all sorts.
Taking down ash trees and stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that would, again, I think sort of motorbikes have been hurtling down some of those tracks.
Yep.
Mind you, there was one we were looking at where you could see the tyre marks of a trail bike had gone up to the edge, and it was almost vertical.
Yeah.
If anybody's gone down there, I mean, he's got a death wish.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't just a little sort of drop-off. This was a long descent and it's very, very steep.
And it is so steep. It really is almost vertical. I mean, you'd be stupid to go down there. But
and I don't know if you noticed, but the runoff at the end, so once you reach the bottom, I mean, there wasn't like, you know, a quarter of a mile to slow down. It just stops.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if anybody had gone down there, they probably didn't survive.
Yeah.
But I do remember years ago, when I was chatting to one of the people on the walk, I did a mountain bike race around sort of Imber Range, and it was something like New Year's Day or the 2nd of January, and there'd been a really heavy snowfall. And it was gale force winds, it was snow drifts. I mean, the conditions were just brutal. And it was a mountain bike race, I think I said.
Mm.
And we finished in the woods there. And I do remember coming down one of those tracks sort of through the woods, very, very steep. And we'd just come off sort of like open downland, so nothing to stop the wind. And I got blown off my bike and I broke my seat post. So basically, you know, the saddle snapped off. So I had to come down through these woods with no saddle, being very, very careful not to sit down, because that would have been eye-watering.
Yeah.
And my saddle was stuffed in my jersey pocket, in my back pocket.
Oh, that would have been a sight to behold.
It would have been if I'd sat down.
Yeah. So, you'll end up coming out at the just opposite Earlstoke Wood, so you can retrace your steps back down. It's a nice circular route, and I think I'm definitely going to go back up that way to do a bit more exploring around Four Hill, Strawberry Hill, Hillbottom Farm.
Yeah.
Very interesting landscape.
Yeah, it's really lovely there. I think somebody was saying that they'd done some walks up through Earlstoke Park Wood, where we kind of start. And there are sort of different trails through the wood, aren't there?
But there are, yeah.
I think some of them are quite overgrown. And I think, didn't you say that you found yourself knee-deep in a stream at some point trying to find
your way
through
there? Yeah, I did. I found myself on the wrong side of a stream and had to navigate across it. Got my feet wet. There's plenty of little tributary paths to wander and explore, because there's quite a lot of dog walkers go there. So,
But I think they tend to sort of go partway up the wood, turn around and go back to Earlstoke.
They do, yeah.
Whereas, you know, the walk we did was quite a lot further and took us right, as you say, right up to the plains. So it's worth venturing a bit further.
Yeah.
It will be very, very muddy, though, in winter.
Yes, it will.
If it's wet. It was even a bit muddy when we did it in places. So this will be a quagmire.
So let's wrap up this week's podcast and start with a thanks to Steve Dixon for the music, as always. This week's bit in the middle was called When Swallows Rise.
Again, lower boots and walking shoes offer still there. Lower.co.uk. Discount code HW20 for 20% off at checkout. Website for the show notes with links and the online shop. And also don't forget the newsletter.
Yes. Which I'll stick another one out next week, I think.
Yeah.
We'll talk about this podcast and other things. And in the meantime, I'm going to go back to writing my book.
Shh, don't tell him. don't tell him. Don't tell him, Pike.